And this is in New York, WBAI, at 99.5 FM.
Whatever became of Buck Rogers, Will Medeering, and Dr. Hewer, my name is Richard Lamparsky, and the lights are very low in the studio, but fortunately I'm wearing my luminous ring that came to me through the mail because I sent in a Kellogg's box top, and I think about 15 cents in those days.
That's right.
It seemed outrageous to me at the time.
It did.
So I'll let my guests introduce themselves. Ladies first.
All right. I'm Adele Ronson, and I played Lieutenant Will Medeering.
I'm Dr. Hewer, and I played... I'm Edgar Saley, actually. But I often think I'm Dr. Hewer because so many people who are about 25 years younger than I am speak to me, address me as Dr. Hewer.
Good for you. I'm Matt Crowley, and I originated the part of Buck. Curtis Arnold played it for the next 4 years, and then I signed the program off the last year.
How did that happen, Mr. Crowley, that you were on and went off and came back?
Well, we had a misunderstanding, and Kurt was also doing Red Davis, I think, at the time, that turned into Pepper Young.
Yes.
And I think his sponsor of Pepper Young said to him, "Now, look, boy, make up your mind. You can't be Buck Rogers and Pepper Young."
Well, was it the sponsors that conflicted? That is, you had a similar sponsor? Because I remember Pepper Young was brought to us by Cam A, the soap of beautiful women.
No, it was not a sponsor conflict, but they didn't like you playing leads,
Oh, you identified with the particular character.
Yeah. I was lucky in that respect, though.
Yeah. Did you?
I played four leads at the same time.
You did?
Yes. John and John's other wife.
Well, I was playing that,
yes,
too.
Yes, all right. And I was doing Pretty Kitty Kelly, and I was doing the Way Down East recordings,
mm-hmm.
and the voice of Frank Munn. And Bee Lilly, the study. I was J. Leslie Pilkington.
Oh, God.
I was five study shows at the same time.
Let me ask you, you were the voice of Frank Munn?
God rest Frank, yes. Frank had the most beautiful voice you'd ever want to hear, singing.
He was the golden voice of radio.
The golden voice of radio. But when he spoke, naturally, his voice, the piping, squeaky voice.
You know, that's funny because I interviewed Lucy Monroe when this series first began. And I remember, not on the program, but I remember she told me that. And she said also, and I think she said this on the air, that studio audiences in those days, she said, were mostly made up of women, particularly when she sang, because it was mostly women who wanted to see semi-classical music performed on the air. And she said she could actually see their faces fall when they walked into the studio and saw Frank Munn, because he had this glorious, rich voice. She said he looked nothing like
right.
one would imagine.
That's true.
Well, so you were his voice.
Right. I know, for one second.
In the old days, you know, in the old days of radio, they used to have a lot of people dubbing voices for singers. And I played the lead on The Gibson Family, which was the first original musical comedy on the air. Lois Bennett sang it. Conrad Tebow sang it. And, oh, dear. Warren, I can't think of his name.
I'm sorry, I can't help you.
A very well-known actor, and I played the leads. We acted them, and they sang them.
And who spoke them?
What do you mean? We spoke them.
You spoke them.
We spoke them.
They just did the singing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to interview, I think the next couple of weeks, Jessica Duncanette.
Oh, really?
Yes. I wonder if she did her own speaking. I'd be afraid to ask her.
No, I don't think she did. I don't know.
She's very articulate on the phone.
I really don't remember whether she did. I don't think she did.
Tell me, when you all were doing Buck Rogers, did it ever occur to you that you might live to an age where these things all became quite possible, really feasible? You know, travels to other planets?
No, that often strikes me now as very extraordinary. Some of the things that we did back there, 25 years ago, and now they're happening. And it's amazing. We thought then that they wouldn't happen for ages and ages, perhaps never.
That's right.
I didn't believe that happened. The one thing I do remember, though, we had an audience one time there. They allowed the children on CBS. And I didn't like the children coming to the show because they'd take one look at me and they'd see me in regular clothes and we weren't in a spaceship and all. And it was very disappointing. The illusion was gone.
Does anybody here remember how Buck Rogers got into the 25th century? Because there's always Buck Rogers in the 25th century. Do you remember how the first
episode
began?
He fell asleep in a cave and didn't wake up.
Mm-hmm. Mind gas, wasn't it?
That's right.
Bended animation.
You know more about it than we do.
You know, you asking about things being extraordinary. I was reading just the other day an article in the Geographic about this new Lassa ray, which is practically a disintegrating ray. They haven't perfected it to that extent yet, but it can, at a great distance, can melt lead and turn it into water.
Oh, but be more humane, Edgar. How about the sleep ray gun? We wouldn't kill anybody. We'd put the whole town to sleep.
Yes.
Well, Killer Kane would probably turn that lacerating ray on a whole
Kane
bunch of us. Who is Killer Kane?
Bill Shelley played it for a while, and Arthur Vinton played it, remember? Arthur Vinton played it for a long time. Do you remember Arthur Vinton?
No, I don't, no.
He eventually ran a big turkey ranch,
farm. Oh, yes, with the White Holland turkeys.
That's
yes,
right.
Yes, yes, yes.
I had Buster Crabb on this program about a year ago. And he talked about the movie version. Well, he was Buck Rogers as well as Flash Gordon in the movies. Oh, yes. Yeah. He made one. I think it was made as serials and then put together as a feature.
Oh, I see.
And he's now recording Flash Gordon on LPs for kids.
Oh, yes. I think I heard about that.
MGM Records.
I was talking to some children the other day, and I think that doesn't the Buck Rogers cartoon still exist?
Oh, yes, it does. Mm-hmm. I don't know where it runs. It didn't run in the Hearst Syndicate then, but I think it does now. Isn't it a King feature?
I'm not sure, but they seem to know about it.
Yeah, it didn't when I was a kid because we took the Detroit Times, which was a Hearst paper, and I got Flash Gordon rather than Buck Rogers when the papers came on Sunday. But I think they're now with King
features.
It was
a great loss.
No, I saw it because I borrowed it from Eugene, who lived next door. They got the news. So I kept up with
the girl. Who was the buck that was in these kids, this is a school at which I do a volunteer job, and it was remedial reading and things, and I mentioned Buck Rogers to them the other day, I don't remember how, and they were talking about Western movies, and who was Buck somebody or other in the Western movies?
Buck Jones.
Buck Jones. They were insisting that this was in Western movies, and I said, oh, no.
But he's in the 20th century.
Oh, I know that, but they didn't remember 20th. They're in the 20th century, too, remember?
Have any of you children that were very impressed at the time?
Children, but I don't think that they...
You didn't have them at that time.
I didn't have them at that time. This was too long ago.
Don't mention it.
Oh, yes, my children. I had two children. They were quite impressed. They went to the studio at times.
Did that destroy the illusion for them at all when they saw
you standing there? No, I don't think so. No, oddly enough, it didn't with children, because I had quite a few children at different times, children of friends who'd come in there. It didn't destroy the illusion for them at all. But for an adult, I think it does.
Did you think you had any more authority over them, being that you were Dr. Ewer as well,
no.
as, well as Daddy?
No. No, the worst crack I ever got was from my son. He'd been to see a performance that I did... somewhere in the summer theaters, and I had sideburns on. And after the performance, the first thing he'd ever seen me in, and after the performance, we drove home. It was in White Plains. And I didn't say anything for a long time. Then finally I got up my courage, and I said, well, what do you think of it? And there was a long pause, and then from the back seat he said, you had more fur on one side of your face than the other.
How long has it been since you've seen each other?
Well, I worked with Matt on a commercial quite recently.
Give it a plug. Totally.
Yes, it's a Listerine commercial, and we hope that it's going to run for a long time.
A long, long time.
Well,
and I haven't seen Edgar for quite a while.
Yes, we did a Volkswagen or something. Oh, we did something where just our hands showed.
Oh, that was an Alcoa spot. That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's about 4
that's
or 5
a few
years
ago.
Yeah.
The last time I remember seeing Edgar was about 2.5 years ago on Edge of Night.
Oh, yes.
You played that wonderful hotel clerk, and he was a mean guy.
Mean guy.
When did Buck Rogers go on the air? Do you remember? What year?
I believe 31.
Yes, I think it was 31.
That early?
I believe, 1931. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that was very early for serial.
We were all very, very young when we started.
It was one of the first, I think it was the very first of these Superman type of things, wasn't it?
As far as I know, yes, I agree.
He was one of the best, certainly.
Yeah.
The character is older than Flash Gordon, you know. By just a few years. No, I say Flash Gordon came after. No, I'm sorry. Buck Rogers was before Flash Gordon.
That's right.
Yes, I think so. I think Buck Rogers is the first one.
The cartoon strip, too.
Yes, it was. Well, the movie, unfortunately, was not as good as the Flash Gordon movie. By the way, Wilma Deering in the movie was Constance Moore.
Oh, really?
Did you see the movie?
No.
You didn't?
No.
How could you resist it?
I don't know.
I mean, just for basis of comparison, say I could have done better than
who
that.
Was I? I never even heard of the movie, Buck Rogers.
It's still on television once in a while.
Yeah, I know. As a matter of fact, I saw a little bit of it one day on television. Mm-hmm. It was fairly recently.
Did any of you hear the famous Wells broadcast of War of the Worlds?
Yes.
Well, it was done while we were, I think, Buck Rogers on already.
Uh-huh.
I don't think we heard it, did we?
No, I didn't hear it.
No, we read all about it in the papers.
Well, that must have upped your ratings.
Yeah. I don't
know.
Well,
you didn't have
ratings.
Did
you hear it,
though? It was a wonderful show.
I didn't hear it.
Yeah. Very exciting.
I remember it really, in the Midwest, people really were panicky over it.
Yes,
they were. It sounds silly now, telling it.
Mm.
But there were people out on the streets and yelling and calling each other on the telephone.
There was a big article in the paper about it recently,
yes.
Wasn't there, just a few days ago or about a week ago?
Was it? Was it an anniversary of it or something?
Know.
I think it was.
Yes, I think
it was an anniversary.
According to the paper, I see that Orson has developed into a big man, too.
Yes. It's, so I knew a woman who was Orson Welles' secretary at that time. And she said he really had no intention of causing a panic like that at all. Not at all. She said they were the most surprised, the Mercury players,
yes, I think
you were called.
Yeah,
the most surprised people in the world when they came out off the air and found out half of America was beside itself.
No. I think it was the author that had written this article the other day. It was something that the author had written, mm-hmm. the author of that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they had picked this particular town very haphazardly, in which the thing was happening.
You must tell what you're doing now.
Well, I have been doing quite a few commercials, and occasionally on some of the soap operas television. I just finished doing a very small run. I call it a walk on Secret Storm. And I've been on Edge of Night and Love of Life and all of them, but I don't have a regular running part on any of them now.
Mr. Staley?
Well, I was just closing a play on Broadway called Those That Play the Clowns, and the critics didn't like it at all, so it only ran 4 days. However, we did get 2 weeks of previews, and it just happens that Mr. Kerr gave me a nice notice, which
was
nice.
He gave Edgar a beautiful notice.
And why shouldn't he?
Thank you.
Mr. Crowley, what are you up to?
Well, I'm sorry I can't say like Adele that I'm doing many commercials. I'd like to do one or two. And I am on Edge of Night once in a while, and reading scripts for the theater that I love to turn down. And radio afforded me the opportunity to be able to turn them down. Because I think the theater is in a very, very sad state.
Yeah, I've had several guests of late that have said the same thing.
I haven't been on the stage for so long that I wouldn't know.
Do you all miss radio? Would you like to be working on radio?
Yes.
Edgar?
Yes, I'd like to be working on radio. Oh, the old days were very nice on radio. You could have 10 or a dozen shows a week and make quite a lot of money. They didn't pay in proportion to what television does, but you could get a lot more shows in radio than you could in television. So I think if the radio days were back, you'd be doing better than you did on television.
Oh, I only wish that television was delayed about, 10 or 12 years. I could make much more money in radio than I could ever make in television, but not from the standpoint of money, but from all day the fun we used to have in the studio. It was a ball. It wasn't work. And nowadays you go into a soap opera. Like, the best on the air, I believe, is Edge of Night. I love to work it. And it's the easiest one to work. But it's not fun. It's work.
No, if you do 2 or 3 days in succession, that is a career in itself.
There's a lot of tension in
the
studio.
Well, it isn't that. Yes, that's exactly it. You walk around, you see your best friends, and they're all muttering lines madly. We're all, until the very minute that we're on the air.
But not on Edge of Night, darling.
Oh, yes, you're all worrying about your lines.
Oh,
sure, you've got makeup.
Edge of Night is a very nice show to work. I agree with you.
Yeah.
You have a camera rehearsal? All of that you didn't have in radio.
Everybody is very busy with the lines.
Well, of course.
There's not much camaraderie, and we used to have a wonderful time on radio.
Well, you didn't have to learn the lines.
That's right.
But on Edge of Night, there's the prompter there.
I know.
And it's wonderful. Now, I work with Johnny Locke, and he used to do the part, the lead on Edge of Night years ago. And working a scene with him, I couldn't tell that man was using the telephone. He had it down to such a science. It was wonderful to see that man work.
Well, that's remarkable. Now, for instance, I haven't done a great deal of of soap opera, and I'm not used to the teleprompter. And I'm scared to death to look at it. For fear I never would look it away if I once got looking at it. I never would look away.
That's exactly what happened to me. I went to it, and I couldn't take... My eyes were glued to it. I couldn't take my eyes away. Until after the commercial.
It's always in the wrong place when you want it, anyway.
Now, you didn't have anything like a teleprompter, an audio prompter on radio. Did anything terrible happen on Buck Rogers? You were live, weren't you?
We were live, and we used to make lots of...
Yes, I wonder these two didn't say something to me. I made a famous one that they always recall to me, and that is I had something about a broad beam focus, and in speaking rapidly, I had broad beam focus, and I always hear that for 35 years I've heard.
We really had the most wonderful time. We were all, you know, there may have been little squabbles among some of them, I suppose, but you never felt it, and there were... We were all such good friends. We all had such a wonderful time.
Well, we
loved being there.
We went from house to house, you know, and parties. And it was a ball.
And each director had sort of a little clique of his own, you know. And we worked like mad. We had a wonderful time.
I know Arthur Hughes and his wife stopped by to see me at the station about a month or so ago. And he talked for quite a while. He said his medium, his favorite, was the stage. But he still works on the stage from time to time. He said what he really misses is radio, because there's nothing like that. Television isn't like it.
No,
movies.
Who was
like
the name of this program?
Just Wayne Bill.
Just Wayne Bill.
He played it right from the beginning.
Yes, 20-some-odd years,
yes,
I believe.
Right from the beginning.
Well, it's too bad there isn't more radio, because I think it has one advantage over television, and that is not the audience plays with you. They have to imagine the setting and all the physical circumstances of it, whereas in television you get some kind of a set put up before. You don't have to use your imagination at all.
I think it's particularly good for kids. I know it was for me, you know, because you had to imagine castles and spaceships and swamps and all these things, you know. It was very good. It was a wonderful way to escape. And mistakes weren't so obvious, you know, and maybe it's because I was a kid, but now you see television shows and, I don't know, there's something wrong about the set or the makeup wasn't right or,
well,
you know,
true.
It's not as easy. Yeah. Whether I've become more sophisticated or it's a different medium, of course. You shouldn't really.
And yet I was surprised one of my grandchildren started listening to a radio, and they have been listening to television almost entirely, and they didn't know how to listen to radio. They asked me, what do you do? What do you see? They don't know how to listen to radio.
Oh, sure.
I know some of the kids who work here, the boy and girl, one's 15, one's 16, Clifford and Edgar, who helped me in the afternoons, and they said, well, they listened to interview programs and the music, but they couldn't understand how I could listen to drama and things years ago. And I said, well, you listened to it, and they told you what was happening, and you could hear the door open and close and the swing on the front porch and the crickets. Now they couldn't understand that. I said, well, not only that, but Virginia Payne told me this, and it reminded me it was true. She said, we didn't just listen to the radio. She said, we watched it. We looked at it.
Yes.
And it was true. I always sat and looked at the radio.
Yes.
Even if you could hear it in the other room, I'd always sit and look at it.
And the sound effects were so marvelous.
See, speaking of sound effects, what's the girl's name? What was the girl's name?
What girl?
Oh, on the sound effects. On Buck Rogers.
Aura Nichols.
Where is she?
I don't know.
A girl did the sound effects.
Was that unusual on radio?
Yeah.
And the sound effects we had in the 25th century, the rockets and all that stuff, a girl didn't.
Yeah, but who could challenge it? Who?
I remember.
Wonderful drum roll we had for the signature.
Oh yes, and I remember that. Where were we, on Jupiter or Saturn or somewhere, in some kind of a conveyance, and they found the thing that made the best sound for it was frying bacon. So they used a record of frying bacon.
That's funny. I don't remember that.
You know, one of my favorite radio actors who has also been on this program, John Gibson.
Oh, yes, Johnny.
Yes, sure. Who, as a matter of fact, suggested we put this program together, said that you, Matt Crowley, tell a great story about something that happened on the Dick Tracy program.
Oh, gosh, yes. Well, Adele and Edgar know that I fluffed around as much as anybody, but my fluffs weren't interesting. They were, just slurred a word. But this time, I didn't slur. I was playing the part of Dick Tracy. And my great friend, Walter Kinsella, was playing my pal, Pat Patton. And the situation was something like this. We were in disguise, and we were trying to get these two crooks to do something. Well, Pat waited for me when I went, while I went over to tell the story to the crooks. Well, then when I went back to Pat,
He said, well, Dick, did they swallow the bait? And in my best dulcet tones, I said, yes, Pat, hook, line, and stinker. Well, I froze, and I just looked across the mic to Walter. And Walter looked up from the script, and then that Irish face of his went into a big grin, and he said, what? I could have cheerfully killed him. I said, they fell for it, hook, line, and stinker. Richard, from then on, I don't know how we got out of that studio that day.
Did anyone fall on the floor?
Well, you couldn't see anyone in the control room. They just died. And he's a great friend, but I could have killed him when he said, what? You know, would you realize if you let the thing go, and a lot of people won't pay any attention to it. Oh, Richard, may I tell you one more story?
I hope you're going to tell the Rupert Beer story.
That's the one I want.
Yeah, because I heard about it.
I think this is a classic, and it's a good example about the way some of these agency executives treat actors and announcers. You can over-rehearse a person, and here is a concrete example of it. Well, Richard, as long as your program goes coast to coast, I think I'd better let the people know that Rupert's beer is a regional beer.
Local beer, yeah.
Local in the New England states and New York City. And this was a big radio program, musical program. And they had rehearsed the whole program, but the signature, so about 15 minutes, they go, well, that's easy, you know, a big fanfare, dum dum bum bum bum. Rupert's beer is on the air. That's all the announcer had to do. So they rehearsed it a couple of times, and they worked on the announcer. They said, no, just listen to the fanfare. Dum dum bum bum bum. And Rupert's beer is on the air. Well, they worked on him and worked on him. In fact, one 10th assistant came out and said, no, you should listen to it. And it's not Rupert's beer is on the air. It's Rupert's beer is on the air. Well, now, you can prolong this as long as you want, but this is actually what happened on the air. The engineer gave the director the cue. The director cued the orchestra leader. He gave the downbeat. This is on the air now. Dum 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 bum bum bum. Rupert's rear is on the...
Who was Buddy Deering? Now, that was, I think, supposed to be your son, or, I'm sorry. No,
brother?
Your son, you were too young and lovely. Yeah, brother.
I thought you had a sister, not a son.
I don't remember.
Well, now, in the books on Buck Rogers and in the movie, there was a Buddy Deering. Now, I'm not certain that I recall
it
on the radio
show. I don't
think
he was on our radio show. Doesn't seem to me that we ever had anybody
Sally,
like that.
Was your sister...
He was?
Sally, what's her name?
I don't remember.
Little girl. Two
other very famous characters were Black Barney and, what is it?
Killer Kane.
Killer Kane.
No, but Black Barney and the boy, he had Walter Tetley played it.
That's true. I forgot.
Oh, I don't remember his name.
They were on quite a lot.
Sure.
I don't remember the boy's name.
I remember that...
the character's name.
Did
he always had everything organized out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Was this a girl, Black Barney?
No,
Barney was a man. Joe Granby used to play it.
Oh, Barney. I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought you said Barney.
No, Barney. Uh-huh. And he was, you know, he was kind of a rough and ready character. And and he was a Mr. Malaprop. And he always,
he had
everything all organized out.
Who were the sponsors other than Kellogg's? You didn't have them all that time, did you?
Cocoa Malt. But there were others, too.
I don't remember the others.
Response.
Wasn't there an ice cream company that had something to do with it, too? I think so.
Hmm. Well, you had wouldn't you have a particular problem on Buck Rogers of taking it seriously because it was so fantastic? Didn't you have trouble breaking up? Or?
No, we did it very seriously.
Oh, serious.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
I remember Jack Johnson, I was supposed to be able to read rather rapidly, so he would... Every now and then he'd get a whole string of a long paragraph of technical terms just to see whether I could get through with them on the air, whether I'd break up on them somewhere.
And I'd listen to Edgar and I'd say, thank the good Lord I didn't have to read that.
Was there anything like a technical advisor on that show to see that you didn't get too far out with inventions? And?
No, I don't think
I don't
so.
Think...
I think that Jack wrote it and... I think he was probably subject to the supervision of the man in Chicago, whose name I can't remember at the moment.
Was it Billy?
Billy? Yes.
Billy, I think
his
name is, yes.
Owned the cartoon strip. Mm-hmm.
Miss Ronson, who else did you play on radio? What other
characters? Well, I played the lead on John's Other Wife for several years.
Well, now there's a program in itself.
That's right.
And I played her.
And he played my husband. Matt played my husband.
Both have standing invitations to come back.
Thank you. That was a lot of fun.
Did you ever get the characters mixed up?
No, no, we didn't. We ran from one to the other and enjoyed it.
The relationships were quite different.
Speaking of that, we sure did run. I signed off. I was the narrator on Pretty Kitty Kelly, a wonderful show.
Was that Eileen Blackburn?
Eileen Blackburn and Buddy Collier.
If I had known that, I would have worn a great big green pin that says, "Listen to Pretty Kitty Kelly, Kelly. CBS, the star's address," and has a picture of her right in the middle.
No kidding.
Mr. Staley, what programs did you play on the radio?
Oh, gracious, almost any you can name. I wasn't on these. I was Pretty Kitty Kelly. I was a lot of Martha Atwell's. But I can't.
Pepper.
I've gotten to the age now where I can't remember any of those things. You have to go back at least 70 years. Then I can remember. Back 70 years, I can remember. But 30 years ago, I don't remember what.
You're probably going to say some other programs, though, Miss Ronson.
Well, I played the lead on the Gibson Family, and I don't remember that.
When was that?
It was on for a year. It was a musical comedy. It was the first original musical comedy on the air, and Arthur Schwartz and Howard Dietz wrote the music. And
were they big names then?
Oh, very.
Oh.
As a matter of fact, a lot of the music came out of their trunks. For this thing, you know, they had it in the trunk already written, and it was used on the show. It was quite a good show. It was a circus story.
It lasted 1 year.
It lasted.
About
a
when
year.
Was that? I shouldn't ask that of a lady. But...
Yes, I can tell you because it was just before I got married. It was about 1934 or five.
Did any of you start your radio careers in Chicago?
No, I didn't.
So many of the radio actors come from there that I usually ask that.
Well, loads of shows originated in Chicago.
No, that's what I say. At the beginning of radio, I think probably there were more.
How did you get the part of Wilma?
Well, as a matter of fact, Carlo D'Angelo gave it to me, but I originally, on the first audition, pilot script or whatever it was, the pilot recording, played Art Dailor. And I don't remember what happened exactly, but suddenly I was being auditioned for Wilma, and Carlo gave me that.
You know,
I was very grateful.
It's very lucky. I had an audition. Marion Hart, or Allen was her name up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I had an audition, a regular audition. And I happened to be the youngest boy there at the time, and she came out and said, "Would you read this script with the girl we're auditioning for a part?" I said, "Well, I don't know. I don't want it to count as my audition. I have my 87 years already." And so I said, yes, I did it. I'd do it. And I read it, and it was the wide-eyed American boy. And so I started hoping it a bit. And Carl came out afterwards, and he wanted my name and address. And I was not even called for the part of Buck Rogers, but I got it.
Yeah, that is lucky. Carlo D'Angelo, did you know Carlo D'Angelo at all?
No, I know the name, of course.
Carlo was a very short, swarthy Italian gentleman who was a dear, dear, gentle person.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to call himself the Little Guinea. And he was really a remarkably sweet, nice person. He gave me many jobs, as a matter of fact.
What was his wonderful expression, Adele? You were working on the script. Stick a pin in it.
Oh, yeah.
Stick a pin in it. If you did something right, stick a pin in it.
Well, the man on the outer side of the decompression chamber is giving me a signal that...
He is?
Yeah. And our spaceship is going to have to land pretty soon.
I don't hear the sound effects.
I've been chatting today with Buck Rogers, alias Matt Crowley, and his faithful companion, Wilma Deering, alias Adele Ronson, and their great friend, Dr. Ewer, Mr. Edgar Staley. And I want to thank all three of them. It's been a great pleasure. Lots of fun. My guest next week is one of the real broadcasting pioneers. She was called the Queen of Radio and the Star of Stars, and for very good reason. She opened the first broadcast from Radio City back in 1933. She did television as far back as 1928. Her name is Jessica Dragonette, and she's included in a segment in my book. This is Richard Lamparsky. I'd like to thank you for listening, and I hope you'll be with us again next week at the same time for Whatever Became of Jessica Dragonette.
Whatever Became of with Richard Lamparsky was recorded. This is WBAI, listener-supported radio in New York City at 99.5 FM.